to an English and German, and to one additional language, French in this case. We appreciate your feedback. Please use the hashtag SeeThroughDingo. On Mastodon, your translators are Snakey and Sibalis. So hi, and welcome to our talk. I'm Simone, and this is my colleague Jürgen. We're both lawyers at the Society for Civil Rights. We haven't been there for 10 years, but other people have been there for 10 years and have been litigating our constitutional rights since then. Hacking Karlsruhe, yeah, what does this mean? Well, we're going to take a quick detour to the past, to the Republika, with Ulf and Nora. Yeah, we're going to introduce you in 20 minutes what we think about Hacking Karlsruhe. Karlsruhe stands for the Federal Constitutional Court, and so where German law lives. We're going to introduce how we believe to do something for freedom in Germany by litigating things. Yeah, it's about court proceedings, and we already heard it in Karlsruhe. That's the Federal Constitutional Court, a very important court for us. Why do we use litigation as a means? It's a very big leverage to strengthen human and fundamental rights that are being put aside by the government and other legal proceedings, because lobbies and big companies have a lot of money to throw behind it, but marginalized groups don't have money to throw behind their rights. So litigation is a very good means to even the scales and to change things. It sounds super, super innovative, but actually it isn't. Organizations have been doing this in the US and here in Germany for a long time. Partially, they do this for the subjects they deal with, but the Society for Civil Rights has been focusing as an institution on litigate very strategically. That's the word and term we use. So yeah, what does strategic litigation mean?
So what do? We do strategic litigation. Why is it strategic? Anyone can come up with a plan. You don't even need a lawyer. But this means for us that we have a long-term strategy for fundamental rights and human rights. That is the areas where we are active. So we don't just do one case here and another there, but over a long time, we are building up our organization so that we can work and that we can go through the various court levels too, and also strategic because we don't just use or take up any case at all to, as maybe a law firm might do. You have people coming to you and then you take up the case. No, we choose our cases carefully and we choose the right plaintiffs, and we try to clarify and mediate what the problem might be with a certain legal position. So, did you understand everything here in this video, or should I? Oh, this is the TikTok version. So, going to the courts. For example, the state buys software from Palantir to surveil you. That is illegal. So, by going through the courts, we can stop this. And many organizations such like ours can support you there. Oh, hi, Jürgen. Yes, hi, Jürgen. Do tell what you do. And yeah, that is my prompt, actually. And we've brought a few things along, things that we went to court for. And this is a bit fast. This is not going to be a plain advertising event for the Society for Fundamental Rights, but this is an incentive to go online and look things up there and read on. But what might be important is if you are interested in our work, we have two more talks that I would like to advertise. That is the one about Palantir about at 8 p.m. and about data evaluation around midnight. Do watch these, but we do want to talk about the fact that there's not just us, but other organizations as well that are working in this field. There are organizations like us that are more or less specializing in litigation, and there are organizations that work with the affected people a lot, and there are many others, friends, as it were, that don't go to court as much, but that work with us, and in that network, we try to reach certain goals. And to not talk about all these at length, we've asked some of them to be with us and tell us what they do, and we'll start with Max of Reporters Without Borders, Reporters Sans Frontières. Maybe you have to sit down. Is this on? Yeah, now it is. Thank you for the invitation. Yes, I am from Reporters Without Borders, and I'm our expert on internet rights, looking at everything that the government is planning in terms of surveillance, especially when journalists are affected. We've made many cases with the Society for Fundamental Rights, and I want to talk about our case about the law for the Foreign Intelligence Service, BSD, and we fought this law all the way up to Karlsruhe, the Constitutional Court, and this does imply long-term litigation. We have to go through certain processes several times. And in one of the cases that we had against this law on the Foreign Intelligence Service, we dealt with the use of state Trojans, which of course is a strong infringement on people's fundamental rights, journalists as well as others. Press freedom is affected. Journalists are often in a particularly in the focus of secret services, especially if they work a bit more deeply, researching about issues such as corruption or human rights violations. So these might be target people for secret services. And in fact, the law actually permits the state or the secret service to not just use state Trojans when you are a target person yourself, but when you are suspected of planning a certain criminal act, but also when you communicate with those target people. So that could affect journalists quite often. And against this kind of surveillance, there is hardly any legal protection. But also, there is not sufficient protection if you are one of the people affected on the side, as it were. Normally, the people affected by surveillance are not informed after the end of the surveillance, so you can't even find out whether your rights have been preserved or whether this was illegal. And this is why we went to the court, first to the German Federal Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe and then to Strasbourg, because you have to then prove that you are working in a kind of situation that makes you interesting for secret services. So you almost have to kind of indemnify yourself. And in order to have better controls for that, we went to the courts. Thank you.
So so we also do this on a European level with European allies. And so I'm calling to the stage Chloé from EDRI. Yeah. Hi. German is not my native language, so I'm Chloé. I work for European Digital Rights. We are a European umbrella organization. We work from Brussels, and we represent more than 50 organizations who work for digital rights. And in the past, we have acted as a kind of secretary, coordinating our network, and we were focusing on advocacy in the framework of political decision-making processes of the European Union. And while our members are doing strategic litigation, but recently we have started to slowly change our strategy, and there's two reasons for that. First, there is the sheer number of laws in the digital area that the EU has passed in recent time. And secondly, there's the fact that the capacities of our members on national levels have been exhausted. And as a network, we cannot keep up with the numbers of laws that deserve to be attacked. So EDRI is getting more active in these areas. and besides measures to enforce UE instruments in the strategy. For example, and based off the DSR, the Digital Services Act, we do complaints against big tech platforms to the Commission. And we have also looked at initiatives and joint initiatives that our French member, La Quadrature du Net, they led that. This went against EU laws, like the attempt to declare an act on e-terrorism or against illegal surveillance practices of member states, like in France. Currently, we are suing the algorithmic profiling systems used by the French social administration. It's not a given thing, but I'm hoping we're going to have success. It's very complicated to attack European laws. Thank you, Chloe.
And then we thought, since we're at the CCC, the Congress of the Chaos Computer Club, we'll have to ask someone from CCC to come to the stage. Constanze, please. I would like to say three things. First, about the GFF, the Society for Fundamental Rights. The three of us, Simone and Jürgen and I, have been collaborating for a longer time on the subject of Palantir, and this collaboration is now continuing with Franziska. So if you're interested in Palantir, there'll be a talk on that at 8:30 in Hall 1. It's going to be interesting, I can promise you that. And all legal people at the Internet, the Society for Fundamental Rights, about 20, these are normally very competent, informed, active people. They know the strategic steps to take. They have the current, the latest information, and they are willing to cooperate. And that is the optimum that you could expect from an NGO. The CCC supports GFF financially sometimes in certain cases. We've always had positive decisions on that from our board, and I myself have been the plaintiff in a strategic litigation case, which was new for me. Not so comfortable feeling at first, but there are a few laws that did disturb me personally. So the question by the GFF whether I would become a plaintiff was clearly positive. And for example, the German health data law, where 70 million people are affected, their data, where health insurances submitted this data to a research center. So this is about 8.1 billion records over several years, which are pseudonymized, but where the individual people in the insurances have no right to object. And we try to work strategically against that with Matthias Becker, the second best lawyer that I ever saw, and with someone from the GFF. And we're trying to have this case treated with European law, because the fact that there's no way to object and that the storage periods with decades is so excessively long is something that we cannot accept. And we're going to continue the case because the Research Data Center, after 2 years, has already managed to submit a security concept. Fantastic. Also, I would like to say, this year, Gerhard Baum died, the former interior minister from the Liberal Party, FDP, and he was an anchor for many cases at the Constitutional Court. He was an interior minister in the 1980s as the interpreter. So we worked with Gerhard Baum and his team in cases, and the last time I spoke with him, he spoke very positively about GFF. He said that the kind of strategic litigation that he and his liberal legal friends, that some of whom have also already died, and he was very happy that there are younger legal experts who have the heart in the right place and who actually engage in strategic litigation now against a government that is overreaching and really stepping up surveillance. So my thanks to JFF for all that.
It's hard to follow this, but yeah, I'm glad that I didn't have to talk, but I can ask a fourth person to the stage. So from Digital Courage, Max.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, hi. As already mentioned, I'm Max. We also like working with you, and you're really very competent, and we really like cooperating with you and working with you. Yeah, about us, we're Digital Courage, and we are engaged in data protection, fundamental rights, having a future worth living in the digital age, and this is why we are going to Karlsruhe, because laws are against the Constitution in our case if they threaten our fundamental rights, like recently the state Trojan Sturgeon's decision. So Max had already mentioned this in another context. It has existed for a long time, but 2017 it was added to the German criminal proceedings, so it could be used in much more criminal cases. And we have looked at what leverage is there against it, and we agreed that, yeah, we can do something. And so we made a constitutional complaint in 2018, and this summer we got a decision. Max already mentioned it takes a long, long time, and this is definitely a problem. And we only had a partial victory in this case. The Constitutional Court agrees with us that the state Trojan is unconstitutional in some cases, but only in case of everyday crime. So there's a certain level. If the prison sentence is maximum 3 years, then it's unconstitutional because it's not in relation to the crime. It's really a gross invasion of privacy to look at all our devices. But on the other hand, if it's grave crimes, if the penalty is more than 3 years in prison, it is legitimate to use this and to invade our privacy. We have some criticisms about this verdict. We may get into this later, but we are glad that we had this partial victory, that certain crimes are not subject to this law anymore. This is only the most recent case, but since the odds, we've sued against mass data retention, also joined with CCC, and we, in some several cases, we had support them or initiated with them, and we're going to continue this collaboration in the future.
Yes, again, thank you. Thanks to all of you for being in this talk and for working on these important issues. You can, you're welcome to stay. We have a few things where we can imagine that you might want to add something. You don't have to, though. But we'll now get into the practical things. How does this actually work? What does legal work look like? I watched a lot of TV in my youth, lots of afternoon programs. So there are court programs or legal programs. Linson & Partner is a German one. The next season of this program is actually coming up. So everyone has their role models. Jürgen, you probably know a few as well. Yeah, we have both male and female role models in these serials, in these legal serials, and I have to say I'm more the Matlock generation. And for all that don't know these, the concept actually was that every week, whenever it came out, there was one person who was suspected of murder, wrongly suspected, and Matlock wasn't a great lawyer, so instead of working on these cases from a legal point of view, he actually investigated these murder cases, and that showed how bad the American legal system is, because if someone is wrongly suspected every week, that something is not quite right. But that is how we perhaps imagined it, but the reality is slightly different. And you have to say that legal work is reading a lot, writing a lot, spending lots of long nights, and there's always these nice word deadlines. To give you one example, in one case, on the 23rd of December, we had an intermediary decision where we kind of lost, and now today we are going to hand in our file for legal remedy. That's how you spend your holidays. And it has to be said, there was a legal firm working with us. They did the bulk of the work, not us, but it has to be done. And the last image here, it is a bit of a Sisyphus kind of work. We'll talk about that later. But why is it this way? Why is it so tedious and not in the Ally McBeal style? There are certain challenges that you have to deal with every time. And you probably know, you're welcome to add things. Let us start with the first case, and the first issue, that is, does the long time that procedures take. For example, we went to court against the G10 law, which is about the secrecy of telecommunications, and which allow certain surveillance measures. We did this together with Amnesty, and after 8 years in 2024, we had the decision, so there's a whole amount of time. And that is no exception either. I'm sure you can talk about this too, Max. Yes, exactly. I was in the BND, which is the Foreign Intelligence Service the Act, the decision against that. And it was Snowden who made it so clear that the things that secret services do just don't have a legal foundation. And there were then these laws to try and legalize these activities, and we went to court against that. And in 2020, we had the decision much earlier than this, in this case here. And the legislator was then asked to change the law because some parts of it clearly violated fundamental rights. And these not really improvements came in 2021, and we're going back to court against this. But now, for the second time, the Constitutional Court said that they were not going to deal with this. Sadly, the court is allowed to reject cases without giving reasons, and that's why we went to Strasbourg as well. That is how it goes. You create laws that clearly violate the Constitution. We say that, other organizations say that during the legislative process, and we're trying to submit our expertise to prevent this from happening. But at the same time, you have a very long time where the legal foundation is in place and the state can use this. And even if it is taken down, the law is being doctored, and they're always creating timeframes where they can continue working as they are. And clearly that is a strategy by the government in order to create facts and have things that they can work with later on.
You also need to keep in mind that in this example, but this affects other cases, of course, as well, from the European Case for Human Courts. It takes 10 years. But in 10 years, tech changes a lot. When we took the State Trojan case to court, but there have been so many technical developments and in all the ecosystem, how these people work, the people that offer the tools, as well as the evaluation of technical mass surveillance, that the technical and judicial statements need to be rewritten again. This delay does not keep pace with the development of technology. And yeah, Max, also the decision about straight Trojans, that took how long? Yeah, we started 2018 and got a verdict this summer, so that was 8 years. It's pretty much a similar time frame. There have been so many technical developments that were not in the original complaint. Like, the importance of smartphones has risen massively. It's used as kind of a second brain for some people, where you can read their most intimate thoughts on this. And this threshold had not been seen at legislators' level. And this was not in our constitutional complaint as much as we would put it in there today. And also another story, we had a case recently, I'm not going to mention the court, where we got news. Yeah, here's the writing from the other party. Yeah, we've had them for 2 years. Sorry. And suddenly, you know, why this keeps taking forever and forever. And yeah, about other level courts, there's the constitutional court, but there's proceedings at a low level court, that's half a year. But we don't have simple cases, so the minimum time is a year if you go through three levels. You're very happy to reach a final verdict after 3 years, but it always takes much longer. Let's go to the point, cases that we lost. Sometimes you litigate for 10 cases and on top of that you lose. We have put lost in quotation marks. Why? Well, we are an NGO. We're not a law firm. We have clients that said we want to win, we want to win, we want to win. But it's about a greater thing. So often means if we lose a case, yeah, well, it shows it's a reality check. Oh, yeah, this group is being discriminated against. Oh, there's too much surveillance. Oh, this and that is happening there. And other organizations can use this for their work to take this to the streets, et cetera, et cetera. So I often say, yeah, we also take on risky cases to use this as means to fight this on another battlefield. But Simone, yeah, sometimes there's no decision at all. We see this in police law. If you go to the administrative courts, it's an everyday thing. Judges can give out letters, but if police work has been illegal, it often leads to, yeah, they recognize that the plaintiff is in the right, but on the other side, there's no true verdict in this case. So where we would like to create precedence and a good judicial argument from the courts, this is, we don't get that. And we've seen this in other organizations and other lawyers have seen this, that this is, this tendency is on the rise, is being used as a tactic.
Yes. And also, it is also the case that, well, we are fairly good lawyers, I dare to say, and we are, get support from very good legal firms. But more and more, it is the case that the other side has just a whole horde of lawyers that earn their 350, 400 euros per hour, and they just throw things at us. And that doesn't make it easy either. And that it does make us therefore proud if we do achieve something and gain something or regularly win, but it does lead to the fact that it gets much harder. And another speciality that you sometimes encounter, if you work against these large law firms, in the texts you find some fairly arrogant comments. How are we described? We do sometimes read, all, of course, with the goal of making our cases declared inadmissible. The Society for Fundamental Rights instrumentalizes this process for their political campaigns. It uses it as a public relations instrument to create awareness of these overarching political issues with the framing, oh, no court should be dealing with this. But this is not just against us, but also our partners, allies. What happens there? Yeah. So research organizations are then declared as left radical organization. The lawyers we work with are really discredited throughout the submission by the other side. And it's not nice to read this, but that doesn't just happen in the written submissions, but also in public communication. Yes. A terrible example, sadly, a recent one, is the sanctions against the leadership of the German Hate Aid organization and two people, their managers, heads. It's not the first time either. The US criticizes people that because they are linked to the tech industry, and we have been defamed as well on our own platform. In Germany, we have the far-right AfD party, which keeps asking the us, who finances us, are you perhaps a cover organization of the state? And that's happening with other organizations too. It's not just the AfD either that does this in Germany, which would be enough already, but we see it from the democratic parties too, that more and more fight against civil society, and the more successful you are in legal proceedings, the more that kind of rejection is building up in Germany. And you butt in if you want to say something, please. So hostility against civil society, and at the same time, sadly, we see that Karlsruhe, the court, is more reticent these days. From very recent times, a case that many of you may have seen in the media, the German government promised to take on Afghan people that under the Taliban regime would be threatened by torture and death. These people then fled to Pakistan and gave up everything in Afghanistan and pointed to the fact that the German government had promised to take them on. And then the government stopped all these procedures and suspended their promises. And the threat clearly was that people had to return to Afghanistan where their life was in danger, clearly. And we, especially our two colleagues from the social justice area and the lawyers we cooperate with, try to support these people and work against this. We went all the way to the Constitutional Court, and what came out, sadly, was disappointing. They said, well, the German government has to decide on these visa applications quickly, and when they are rejected, then maybe do we have to go all the way through the court levels again, knowing that there really isn't any time for that. So this also affects very different cases too. We are a bit short in time, but Max from Digital Courage, if you may talk a little about this, you're welcome to do that. Well, yes, the State Trojan, for example, that case, it wasn't about the fact which crimes this was to be used against, but we clearly pointed to the fundamental question whether the state is actually allowed to buy exploits on the black markets, keep them secret in order to hack our devices. And the decision completely circumvents this issue. There is nothing on this. And the fundamental question whether the state is allowed to buy exploits is something that Karlsruhe completely withheld from judging on. So there is no decision there, sadly. Yes.
But it's not the only point we can criticize the government on. Surprise, surprise, not. But from a level, we had cases here, pushbacks are illegal. The government says, this is on a case-by-case basis. We're just going to continue. We don't care what the courts say. It's not the first time. It's been going back to judgments on assisted dying, where courts said it's this, government said we don't care. We also see this, and this has been mentioned. We have an area we sue against the law, judges say it's against the constitution. What happens? The same law gets passed again in another color, and we start all over again. It's getting better, but unfortunately, we also have the government ignoring a lot of law. So, so we have some time for questions. So I want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you to everybody who makes this work possible. Thank you for everybody who supports us from our organization. Constanze also said you support us directly. So there's also cooperation between the organizations. So thank you for that. And we couldn't do this without you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jürgen and Simone, and all the dear guests for this really interesting talk. We have a bit time for questions and answers, and I see people actually in the starting blocks already. Microphone two, please. Thank you for the cool talk. Thank you for what you do. I have become a supporting member because of this, but I was wondering, hey, what else can I do? In my extended family, I told people that I have now become a supporting member of this organization that does strategic litigation, and then what is this? Oh, then I heard responses like, this just blocks the courts. And I wondered how in the bubbles outside our own can you bring this message across, and how does it help you as a private person?
Yeah, I'd say that's an excellent question, which is, yeah, important and plops up in so many areas. I think what helps is, and that's only my personal experience, is to give examples of one specific case that affected a lot of people. It's like the Palantir proceedings. It's hard to explain the technicalities, but to say, hey, you could get into a traffic accident, the police has your data, and you don't know what else is in there. If AI looks into that and suddenly the police is at your door, anybody could be affected. Now imagine if it affects you all the time. So this is my strategy in that. So do you have other input on this? Yeah. What always works as so follow us, follow our news, get our newsletters, spread the good word. So it gets more common, and these prejudices are getting taken out of the world. And yeah, we are trying to communicate why our work is important, because yeah, we do one proceeding for a lot of people. It's better for the courts instead of doing lots and lots and lots of lawsuits on this topic. Thank you.
Thank you. I've already had the signal that there are many questions coming in through Matrix and IRC, so I'll hand over to our signal angel. Thank you first for your work. And the internet would like to know which structural changes in the legal system, in your opinion, would be required to have a more effective enforcement of fundamental rights.
Oh, yeah. How much time do you have? Well, I can get started with what we are seeing in the platform area, the case of who's responsible, where do you actually sue, and there's the European regs that say which courts are responsible for what. They often point to Ireland, where a lot of these platforms are headquartered, and we see a lot of room for improvement there, and we see that the law is being interpreted and there's a lot of leeway in there, but at the same time there's a lot of legal insecurity that could be met by tightening the regulations for certain groups or loosening for others. I'm not going to be too technical, but look for example to the Netherlands or to the USA. Surprising, but yeah, there's judicial systems that make it easier to do work like ours. And you see in Germany that there's decisions being made that makes our work so much harder. Often there's a difference in the legal systems. It can be made easy, but our work can be made harder, which is often the case in Germany.
Yes, thank you. Now on to microphone two. Thank you for the talk. I would like to ask, how does strategic choice of plaintiffs look in your case? For example, there were cases where the decision was not to represent someone to avoid a certain media echo, and that would not have been right for the case. Do you have considerations like this to make, or is it just who would be the best representative for the fundamental right in question?
It really depends on the case, but there's a lot of aspects to this. There's the legal and judicial questions, who is the perfect person legally to represent this, but we're not a law firm, we're an organization that wants to communicate certain things to the outside. And this is about, can we tell the right story with this person? So it's not an exclusion criterion, but you have an image of the perfect plaintiff and you never find that, but you have a catalog of criteria, what you're looking for, and really depends on the case. There's cases where we've had thousands of options, and there's cases where we look for a person we can sue with for years. So, thank you for the talks, and we're out of time. The next talk is in 15 minutes, so give a round of applause for Jürgen and Simone.